Hello and welcome to today's inspiration. I'm Lisa Berry. I'm so grateful you're listening and so excited to share some love and laughter with you and perspective, because I really do believe it's all perspective. It's how you choose to look at life. It's what you focus on. That's what you end up experiencing. So I choose to focus on being happy as I can, sharing what I call unlimited love, and throw some humor in there so we don't take it all too seriously. I love to laugh, and I love to help distract others from the challenges of life, and that's just one of the many reasons why I do this show. So I'm glad and I'm grateful you found it and you're sharing your time with me. And I know I talk a lot about knowing yourself and loving yourself and the importance of becoming emotionally aware. And I almost always go back to meditation as the place to begin that journey. And if you're a frequent listener, you know I often mention one of my favorite meditation teachers and leaders, David G. And today, I am so honored and grateful that he has decided to join us on today's inspiration. So welcome, David G.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Lisa. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, man. If you've heard him speak or listened to one of his meditations, you often hear him refer to you as coming to you from the sweet spot. Is that where you are right now? Are you in the sweet spot?
I am live in the sweet spot of the universe, Carlsbad, California.
All right. And is Peaches the Buddha princess with you?
She is.
She is.
Peaches, in every moment, resist nothing and you'll receive unconditional love. And she's right here with me.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I often talk about making meditation mainstream. It's been increasingly proven to be a solution to so many of our problems in life, yet people seem to be intimidated by that. But why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's, first of all, you know, thank you to all the listeners who've taken the time to spend this sweet time with us. It's a joy to be here. Meditation is, it's got a little bit of a stigma around it because it's thousands of years old. It originated, in Asia or the Indian subcontinent. And there's a lot of people who think if you meditate, then you close your eyes and you suddenly start chanting something or doing something that somehow it's going to suck you into the cult. And you'll be trapped in some kooky, spiritual cult, or that somehow meditation is going to get between you and your God or your divine creator or whoever you connect with. And I've often said that if prayer is talking to God, meditation is listening. And so, we have an opportunity right now in this time. The time is right. The time is perfect for people to just step beyond all of that gibberish and to truly connect to that stillness and silence that rests within.
Now, how did you get into meditation? I really think it's important to share your backstory so people realize that you don't need an anointment or an appointment, that anyone can meditate. You were actually working in New York City, weren't you?
I was. Working in mergers and acquisitions, and mostly in business and finance for most of my early years. And at a certain point, I realized that I was experiencing a real lack of balance. I wasn't really finding fulfillment in my work. And at the time, I was working in the World Trade Center on the 82nd floor and in Tower 2. And there was this. I was going through a deep period of lack of fulfillment in my life. And as I was walking past this row of cardboard boxes that people, homeless people, were living in, this hand reached out, it grabbed my leg, and this face peered up at me and said, what's going to be on your tombstone? And that was like a really powerful moment for me. It's a fairly reflective moment. And I just wandered around with those words resonating in my head. And I sort of like set off on my own eat, pray, love journey, sort of without the eating and without the love, and just headed off to like find the guru, find the answer. And I hooked up with Deepak Chopra, who was having a workshop in Oxford, England, and I connected with him, and we became pretty close during that time that I spent with him. And then he instructed me to head off to India and search for the guru. And I traveled around India, high and low, you know, in search of the guru. And it was one day while I was laying in a hammock in a cashew forest in Kerala, southern India, that I suddenly realized the guru rests within. The guru rests inside. In fact, the answer to every single question that we could ever ask ourselves actually rests within. We just need to quiet ourselves down enough so that we can hear the whispers of our heart. And that, for me, that was just the aha of aha moments. And from that point on, I really headed out on a mission of trying to find out as much as I could about meditation, to explore it, to study it, to study the ancient teachings, and to really develop and cultivate my own practice. And in time, I started working with Deepak at the Chopra Center, and I was the chief operating officer, and then the lead educator, and then the dean of Chopra Center University. And over that period of time, it was about 10 years, I really got to really understand the nuances and meet so many people from so many different walks of life, and find out like what stood in the way of most people's search for fulfillment and for happiness, and really was able to connect to meditation practices, to all different types of meditation practices. And that's really why I wrote my first book, Secrets of Meditation, so that people wouldn't be so afraid, they wouldn't be so scared, that they'd realize, oh, you know what, you can, it's not just chakra and tantra and mantra and mindfulness and vipassana and all these other meditations. There's even a chocolate tasting meditation that we can connect to. So many different techniques and tools, depending on our own individual styles and inclinations, that can allow us to connect to that stillness and silence that rests within. And from there, we can be more creative, we can be more intuitive, we can be calmer, less conditioned, make better choices, and suddenly start to feel greater fulfillment in our lives. That's sort of like my, you know, my backstory on that.
That's great. Do you feel like it's your gift? I'm a longtime commercial radio broadcaster in the Metro Detroit area. I've been on the air for a number of commercial radio stations for a number of years. I don't say how many because then people think I'm old. But when I hear your voice, you have such a connecting voice, and you can just really get in. And that's why I love the power of radio, because I can sit here and I can get into somebody's head or their heart or their home. But you have such a gift for broadcast connection. Did you know that, or was that something that just developed along the way?
I guess, you know, my voice is my voice, just like your voice. You know, you can't do anything about it, sort of. It's sort of there. I don't condition it. I know that, you know, in the world of voiceover artists, that's a fairly closed community up in L.A., and there's a great movie about that called In a World. I don't know if you get the chance, everybody should just watch that. It's pretty funny, but like every commercial, every movie, every advertisement on TV is pretty much done by five people in LA.
Oh, exactly.
And so I started doing guided meditations, a little more than a decade ago. And I realized I'm not going to be one of those voices that says, you know, eat butter or this movie, you know, or In a World. I wasn't going to be one of those. But I love to share this timeless wisdom, and I love to really explain it and translate it and demystify it for people. And I did a couple of these things. I created this thing called the 21-Day Meditation Challenge, I don't know, in 2005 or 6 or something like that. And kept doing that, and more people. First, it was only 5,000 people, then 10,000, then 50,000, then 100,000. And then Deepak Chopra and David Simon, the co-founders of the Chopra Center, said, hey, we want to get involved in that. So they started doing it as well. And in 2012, when I left, I stepped down as dean of Chopra Center University and went out on my mission to teach meditation. I think, you know, Deepak and Oprah have now merged.
Right.
To continue that. So for me, it was, I don't know if it's a gift, but it certainly just happens to be what my voice sounds like, and people tend to listen to it because of that. So it's great. You know, I've had really probably in the last I don't know, 15 years, I've created more than 500 guided meditations, and you can pretty much access most of them on my website for free. But that's really just allowed me to connect to people who, you know, aren't, you know, they're not readers, and they don't travel, and they just want to stay in their house, you know, around the Great Lake area, and especially when it's cold out, and really connect on a deeper basis. So the fact that we can connect with people, you and I, and so many others, through the power of the internet and through voice transmission is really great. So as long as my voice keeps working like this and people keep paying attention, I'll keep singing in the shower.
Well, I do like to travel, and I do like to read, and I still love to listen to your meditations. We're talking to David G., and he mentioned he has a book called The Secrets of Meditation. Do you feel, I'll tell you, I do have another radio job in addition to this, and a guy I work with is now under treatment for high blood pressure because it's a crazy world. And I literally said, you should try meditation. And he just looked at me. And I said, you look up this guy's website, davidg.com. And he just looked at me. And he said, okay. And then I sent him on his way for the weekend. And I haven't asked him because I don't want him to think that I'm bothering him about it. But how do we crack that code? How do we get people to know how good meditation really is for you?
You know, I think we have to live it. And I remember when I first started meditating and I first started working at the Chopra Center, it's like 2003, I would be like running around town grabbing people and saying, you're out of balance. You need to come to the Chopra Center and learn how to meditate. And obviously nobody came and everybody thought I was crazy. And so my dear mentor, David Simon, said to me, you know, really just live it. And if people are interested, they'll come up to you and they'll say, hey, you look so relaxed, or you look so calm, or you really handled that situation. What's your secret? And it's at that point that I say, oh, well, by the way, I just happen to meditate. And so I think that it's tough because a lot of people, you know, it's not considered the normal thing. Most people, you know, having a cocktail is the normal thing, or having a beer or a wine or a shot. Is the normal thing, or, you know, watching TV or watching videos or surfing the net. You know, we've so many other things that we use to try to distract us from the stress and intensity of daily life. And the thing is, we all have the ability at any moment to just follow our breath in and out and to slow ourselves down. And now finally, it's been scientifically proven that meditation does lower your blood pressure. It does lower your stress hormones of cortisol, glucagon, and adrenaline. It does elevate your immune system. It does increase your chances for a restful sleep at night. It does actually thin out the platelets that flow through your bloodstream so that your chances are higher that if you meditate, you won't have a stroke or you won't have a heart attack. So, you know, as science is finally confirming it, we've seen the cover of Time magazine. Finally, you know, I think back in 2003, they had a picture of Heather Graham on the cover, and it was like the science of meditation. And then they had Christy Turlington, you know, the science of yoga. And about 9 months ago, they had something, you know, called the science of mindfulness. So as long as science keeps validating and confirming that meditation has these incredible powers, I think people more and more will stop resisting or stop thinking it's a cult, and they'll try it.
And it does seem like we're seeing more medical proof that meditation is really good, as you just outlined for us. I know I worked a long time. I had two kids, and I was, you know, a stressed out mom and a full-time employee. You know how that goes. And I just got off the cycle, and I started meditating, and I simply asked myself, who am I, and what do I want? And I came out of it, and I thought, my greatest gift is that I have a large capacity to love. So I thought, well, that is not going to pay my bills, but I'm still working on it. And I find people are uncomfortable when you talk about love. If you try, some people, it's like they can't handle someone being nice and calm around them. Do you ever find that?
I do. And they always wonder, like, what drug are you on? Or,
right.
Or, you know, what are you taking for that? But, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, you think necessarily that's not having this powerful impact, but the fact that your style and the fact that you are flowing love so readily and so easily is probably the reason why you're on so many stations. And that's why you're touching so many people. And so, you know, ever so often you might want to, you know, put on a shirt that says, you know, I'm meditating or something like that, so that, you know, your viewers or your listeners can connect to that. Because I think, you know, when you have a position like that, you know, if Barack Obama came out right now and said, oh, I meditate every single morning, then the whole world would suddenly, you know, people would start doing it. So it just takes some powerful people, some influential people, some people who are like in the media on a consistent basis. And, you know, that's how it happens. One of my students is Ariana Grande. So, you know, she's, you know, pop sensation, and she's a, you know, an amazing being. And probably about 5 years ago, I taught her to meditate, and that was just a real powerful opportunity. At the time, she wasn't famous, but, you know, now we start to see Katy Perry's meditating and Ariana Grande's meditating, and, you know, we're starting to see more and more people really pick it up, who are in high-stress jobs and who are in high-pressure situations. I work with law enforcement. I work with a lot of police academies and different precincts, that working with the Blue Courage organization through the Department of Justice. And we're really starting to see that, you know, it's penetrating cops and it's penetrating the military. And so suddenly, you know, this once kooky, crazy, woo-woo kind of thing is now just gaining a little more traction in mainstream. Even Anderson Cooper did a special on 60 Minutes on mindfulness, and Dan Harris from ABC, you know, wrote that book, 10% Happier. But he wrote the book 10% Happier, titled it that, because he was actually he was embarrassed to announce to the world that he was meditating, so he didn't want to make the book title about meditation. And when people would say to him, so what's the benefit? What are you seeing from all this? He would say, well, I'm about 10% happier. And so we're starting to see meditation really going mainstream as more and more people that we interact with and see from the nightly news to see in, you know, in our cultural realm start to do it. And that's really where it's going to, you know, taking on more and more traction.
Well, see, and that's the study of happiness is like my hobby, but I will have people argue with me and they say, I can't be happy. I can be content, or I can't be happy. Or there's Lisa. She's all full of, she's loving flowers, and you just keep her on your happy ways. They're like offended by it. I don't know
That's why I often say we transform the world by transforming ourselves. You know, we can't run around and hit people over the head and go, you need to be happier.
Right.
We just need to enjoy it, love life, experience it, you know, really share in that. And, you know, we should, all of us, you know, whether you're on radio or not, you know, should just, you know, remember the power of your ripple. And that could be just as something as simple as you smiling at someone in a restaurant or in a store when there's a transaction or an interaction. And then that person goes, oh, you know, everyone else was so mean to me today. That person smiled. I think I'll, you know, keep that in. And that's really how it happens. You know, just like if you walked up to someone and said, come on, start laughing. They would say, well, I don't think anything's funny right now. I can't start laughing. But if you told them a really funny thing, they'd probably start laughing. So I think what I try to help people with is to understand the power of meditation. And we can do it right now. So if there's anyone listening who's never meditated or who struggled with that practice, we'll do an easy meditation that will show you the incredible power that something so simple can have. So first, why don't we why don't we think of something that's been bothering or disturbing us over the past week? Something that's been frustrating us or irritating us. Don't go too deep. You know, don't go back into your childhood, or it's not therapy. But, you know, sort of maybe someone said they were going to do something and they didn't, or something was supposed to happen and it didn't, or something wasn't supposed to happen and it did, and it really irritated or bothered you. And if there's a person involved with that, maybe you can see their face in your mind's eye. You know, you can start to really connect to that person or to that individual, something along those lines, and see, you know, very clearly. Maybe you were even feeling that irritation somewhere in your body, someplace in your physical body. And when you're really clear on that, when you really have connected to that, close your eyes and through your nostrils, take a long, slow, deep breath in and watch your breath as it slowly moves down into your belly. And once it gets there, hold it there. And then after you've held it for a little bit, allow that breath to come back up and watch it. Watch it as it moves up your belly, into your chest, into your throat, into your sinuses, out again through your nostrils. And now hold that breath out and watch it as you slowly let it go, as it dissipates into the ether. And now you can breathe normally and open your eyes. That was about 16 seconds. And if you played along, and I'm hoping everybody played along, but if you played along, for those 16 seconds, you weren't thinking about that irritation that our mind was just on. For those 16 seconds, we weren't in the past and we weren't in the future. We were fully present. And that was a 16-second meditation, just following our breath, just witnessing our breath as we stayed in the present moment. So if you played along, you just meditated. And so we know that we can drift our attention away from anything that's irritating or maddening or saddening or depressing or frustrating, and we can come into the present moment. And ideally, in the 17th second, after the 16 seconds, maybe we're a little clearer now. Maybe we're a little less reactive. Maybe we're a little more open or accepting, and we're not so chemically induced. Our emotions aren't driving our decision-making. And if you do that 4 times, it's a minute. And if you do that 20 times, that's 5 minutes. And so when I teach that to like a group of yogis, we call it 16 seconds to bliss. And when I'm teaching that in the business world, I call it 16 seconds to clarity. And when I'm teaching it to the military, I call it tactical breathing. But whatever you want to call it, we just did a pattern interrupt for 16 seconds. And if we can introduce that, you know, more regularly into our life, do that every 2 hours at 10, 12, 2, 4, and 6 throughout the course of your day, and you'll find yourself being a little more patient, making better decisions, being a little more creative, and having greater intuition. And then you'll start to just be happy. You know, there's this cool thing that, like, if you walk into a dark room, you can't do anything with the darkness to move it away. You have to turn on a light or shine a light. And it's the same thing if we find ourselves swirled up in all these thoughts and emotions. There's very little we can do with that, but we can drift our attention to something else that will allow us, when we come back to it, we'll be a little more clear, a little less conditioned with how we respond. So that's, you know, something as simple as that. You know, we all just meditated together, and no one got hurt, and it wasn't painful, and no one got swept away, you know. Right, we're still in our bodies. We didn't get, like, swept away into some spiritual vortex. And so I think that's the key. It's introducing these little opportunities that everyone can access, and everyone, no matter how busy you are, you have 16 seconds.
And quiet that conversation in your brain, you know, get rid of those thoughts that you're going over and over and over again that aren't getting you anywhere positive.
Yeah, we have 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts a day. That's a thought every 1.2 seconds. They are coming, you know, so they are just pouring in and pouring in. And they were pouring in during those 16 seconds too, but our attention was on our breath. So that can really just allow us to step away from a lot of the kookiness and the craziness that drives us crazy over the course of the day.
In a lot of your meditations, David G., you talk about surrendering to the moment or letting go. Is that just by focusing on your breath?
Well, there are so many different techniques. You know, we can do that. You know, most people, you know, they sit down to eat dinner, they turn on the TV, they put the newspaper or a magazine or a book in front of them. There's another person there, they're chatting away, and their meal is involved in it being pulled in all these different directions. And if instead, if you just, you know, close your eyes and actually chewed for 5 minutes, just with your eyes closed, with your attention on, you know, essentially, what is the food, you know, what am I tasting? What am I eating? I've found that it's an amazing weight loss tool as well, because suddenly you go, oh, I'm not just shoveling food into my face. I'm actually eating something that tastes delicious, and the aromas of it and the flavors of it and the tastes of it. And when you put that much attention on every bite that you have and on everything that you're doing, you lose weight. You eat less. There's no, you know, you're not eating emotionally like most of us are doing. So something as simple as just being present allows us to listen to someone who's talking to us as opposed to waiting for them to shush up so we can then speak. It allows us to not suddenly be reactive to a momentary situation or scenario, but we can sit and sort of allow it and then make a better choice. I really think that we make much better choices and we make much better decisions when we come from a place of stillness and silence. There's a beautiful expression in the ancient Vedic Indian text, the Bhagavad Gita. It's chapter 2, verse 48. And it says, yoga sta kuru karmani, and which simply means establish yourself in the present moment and then perform action.
Oh, I love that.
And we're always better. I have this vision. I don't know. Maybe it was about four Super Bowls ago, of Aaron Rodgers on like the 1-inch line. You know, the Packers are on the 1-inch line and they're trying to get in. And I think it's fourth down, and it's the Super Bowl. And so there's 10 guys on his side of the line who are all like twitching and grunting and getting ready to like protect him. And there's 11 guys on the other side of the line, and they want to like rip his head off. There's 80,000 people in the stands. They're screaming and cheering, going crazy. There's probably another 80 million around the world jumping up and down. And I had that vision while I was watching that game. There's like one person totally still, and it was Aaron Rodgers. And, of course, then he did a quarterback sneak, and he walked the ball in for a touchdown. But in that moment, he was totally still. He was like the perfect expression of being in the present moment. And he was probably the clearest person on the planet in that minute with the biggest task ahead of him. And he was the clearest, and he was the most focused. And so in that moment, I was like, yes, you are like the perfect poster boy for meditation, being so, so unreactive and unconditioned. And I think, you know, there are many, many athletes like that. But, you know, another one, you know, is Tom Brady. I think he went to Michigan. You know, I think he was a Wolverine back in the day.
Yes.
And, you know, so some of the greatest athletes that we've seen, whether they're athletes of the past or athletes of the present, or even people who are in high-pressured situations, when they can just get still for a moment and breathe, those thoughts are still pouring into them, but their attention is on the task at hand. And that, I think, allows us to just be better versions of ourselves.
I think be in the moment. As I said, I call myself a moment saver. You know, I would rather be in the moment and be aware. And as you said, don't wait for the next person to stop talking just so you can jump in and say, you got to listen to what they're saying. Listening and paying attention to someone is the greatest gift I think we have to give.
Yes, and if we don't have it, you know, if we're not really good at it, we can cultivate it simply by, while they're talking to us, just following our breath. That just slows us down. It almost gives us permission to actually have a conversation as opposed to having a one-way monologue where someone just happens to be standing in front of you. You know, there's so much that we miss when people are talking to us, and if we can slow ourselves down, we can sort of sense their emotions a little bit better. We can raise our own emotional intelligence. We can even, you know, discover our purpose or find out, you know, what's our path to deeper fulfillment or just coming up with a creative solution. It's that pattern interrupt that actually works chemically in our brain. It sort of like pushes the neurons apart for like a millisecond and then allows them to come back together. You know, when you're at, retelling a story to someone and you're talking about a particular actor, but you can't remember the actor's name, and you're going like, oh, it's that guy. What's his name? And then if someone says, hey, do you want ice cream, or what kind of ice cream do you want? I'm going to go run to the store and get some ice cream. It suddenly pulls you away from that moment, so that then when you come back to it, you go, oh yeah, that was George Clooney. But if you were stayed in that moment, the spiral gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and we get more constricted, and our memory doesn't work as well. So it's a great tool for problem solving, getting present. It's a great tool for enhancing our relationships, because it allows us to listen and other people to listen to us. And so there's so many great opportunities that just taking a couple of moments, whether it's 16 seconds or 16 minutes a day, can afford us. And that's why truly I'm a diehard champion of meditation.
Are you also an example of perseverance? You told me I could ask you anything. So here you went from this big New York finance guy, and now you're traveling the world as a meditation leader. Did that take effort? Were you ever tempted to give up, or did you just feel so strongly about it, you just kept moving forward?
You know, I think there's a lot of different reasons that people make choices. And I find pain to be a great motivator. Pain can get you off the couch. Pain, you know, when you get down to the bottom of your pain threshold, or to the top of it, whatever that is, you know, then you can say, that's it. You know, as Popeye would say, that's all I can stand. I can't stand no more. And so we, you know, for me, I was feeling so sad and so unfulfilled, and so unguided, directionless, I should say, with my life, that I knew what I didn't want. I had no idea what I wanted, but I knew what I didn't want, and I knew what didn't serve me. And so that was pretty easy for me, coming from a deep pain point. But there's a great quote by Winston Churchill. If you're going through hell, keep going. And so I think, you know, I don't know much about Winston Churchill, but just that quote alone is an important archetypal message for me, because I think we all can suddenly go, oh, well, it looks like that door is closing on me. I guess I'll stop. And, you know, my philosophy is, why stop? Might as well keep going. You can always stop. You know, if it suddenly gets too hard, you know, 10 years from now, you could stop, or 10 minutes from now. But why stop now? And so, you know, I feel that way about taking opportunities in our life. When someone says, well, I just got offered this job, but what if I don't like it? So my philosophy is, take the job. Find out if you like it. And if you hate it, guess what? You could quit. But when I find the universe is opening up doors for me, I've sort of convinced myself to step in. And, you know, that doesn't always lead to the answer that I was looking for, but it certainly gives me one more opportunity than I had if I was sitting on the couch.
Great example. Now, and I told you earlier, I value travel. So now I see David G traveling all over the world, and I'm probably more excited about it than you are. I don't know, maybe you are. How is meditation experience different in other countries as it is in the United States? Because tell us where you've been and how that's been going.
Over the last 3 years, I've probably been traveling about, 250 days a year. You know, been in a different place teaching, or been in a different place, you know, experiencing something regarding these ancient teachings. And I actually find meditation to be like one of the easiest things for me to do when I travel, because it really can't do much for the first 15 minutes of any airplane flight, so you might as well just sit there and meditate. And so that's part of every flight that I do. I start with a meditation. And if you have a fear of flying, or if you get a little nervous when things take off, I'm pretty blasé about it now, but you know, even if when the plane's having a little shaking going on, or
right, or they, you take off and then you kind of fall back down. I don't like that feeling.
Right, whatever that is. So if you take that time and you're meditating, you can just, you know, you can disconnect from that. But I find it's so funny. I find that as I travel around, there seems to be like a commonality. I was just in Stockholm a couple of weeks ago, and then I went to Amsterdam after that, and then I was up in Vancouver, and then I was up in Grand Prairie, Canada. So that's probably 1,000 miles north of you. You know, in so many different varying places, when we say, let's close our eyes and breathe, guess what? It's so universal. Hmm. And everyone is struggling out there. You know, everyone has a disappointment or something that they're trying to get done, or their heart could be opened a little bit more, or they had their heart broken, or they broke somebody else's heart, you know, or they didn't get the job, or they did what they thought was a good job, and someone said, no, that's not up to snuff. You know, so, you know, it's life. And so that exists, you know, no matter where we are in the world. So I find that everyone feels better when we close our eyes and just follow our breathing. And there's that's just one technique out of the hundreds of different types of meditation techniques. But the thing I love about just following your breath in and out, and that's been part of so many different Eastern and Asian traditions of meditation. But the beauty of that is just by following your breath in and out, you start to feel more connected to the person that's sitting next to you. So whether I'm in a room of, you know, whether I'm teaching, you know, 500 people, or whether there's just like five of us sitting in the room and we're meditating together, you get a sense of connection, of deeper connection. And science, of course, is now saying that when we're in this state, our brain waves are all emanating gamma waves. And gamma state, that's a gamma state of consciousness, that's a, you know, gamma brain waves. Gamma brain waves have now been associated with deeper connection and love and feeling good about those around you. And it's even helped in schools to help kids from not bullying others because they feel more connected to them. You know, it's like your right hand and your left hand. They would never battle with each other. They would never argue with each other. You know, your right hand wouldn't sneak up on your left hand and punch it, you know, because they know they're all part of the whole. And when we sit around, no matter, you know, whether we're sitting in Moscow or whether we're sitting in Jerusalem or whether we're sitting in Washington, D.C., or whether we're just sitting in our own living room, if we can connect with others in stillness and silence, it reminds us, guess what? There's 8 billion people on the planet. There's 8 billion paths to whatever we're trying to do. And when we all die, and we're all going to die, and we get to the top of the mountain, you know, to whatever that looks like to you, depending on your connection to Source or God or Jesus or whatever that is, we're going to look down and we're going to realize, just guess what? There were 8 billion paths to get here. This was mine. Someone's got their own. And gamma waves scientifically now are being proven to make us feel more comfortable with that connection. And that's one of the beautiful things. So whether I'm in, you know, whether I'm in Europe or whether I'm in Canada, whether I'm in the U.S. or in Mexico, South America, it doesn't matter. That's the one thing that can connect us. Maybe it's not language. Maybe it's not our cultures. Maybe it's not our TV or our radio or our magazines, but it definitely is our breath. It definitely is our breathing. And it definitely is our connection that we're all humans just trying to get enough food on the table, struggling out there, sometimes bumping into each other, and we all just want to feel a little bit better. And so you talk about, you know, people saying, no, I don't want to be happy. That's the person who probably wants to be happy more than anyone, but they stub their toe so many times on that they don't want to risk doing it again. So this is an incremental, sweet, innocent way for them to start moving back into their happiness. Because guess what? We're all entitled to happiness. We're all worthy. You know, it's even in our, if you go back to like 1776 in the United States, you know, this is like all of us are actually entitled to like the pursuit of happiness. Doesn't mean we're all entitled to happiness, but we're all entitled to pursue it. So why don't we all just pursue it in such an easy, gentle, effortless way?
I could not be happier than I am at this very moment. What a wonderful thought that you are sharing all over the world. You know, I talk about that every week. I say, we can be happy. Why would you want to live your life any other way? And here you are out, not just in the United States, but across the world, teaching people how to be connected and how to be calm and how to be happy. I think that's amazing. I'm so honored that you agreed to be on the show and share that with me and our listeners. And I know you're sharing your time, but I have a couple more questions for you. I don't know. Can you hang on for a few more minutes?
Sure.
When you hear David G., you think of RPM. Are you still advocating that?
I still do. I advocate RPM. And for those who don't listen to it, you know, a lot of people say, well, when am I supposed to meditate? How can I meditate? Should I meditate after I wake up and after I've checked my emails? Should I do it after I've walked the dogs? Should I do it after, you know, I dress the kids? Should I do it after I shower? Should I do it after, you know, there's like so many different things. And what I realized is that going through our morning ablution rituals, whether it's peeing or pooping or brushing or hair or makeup or breakfast or liquids, you know, whatever that is, we do all of those in a ritualistic fashion. And we've been doing that for many, many years, sometimes like for 25 years. And usually our Monday through Friday routine, where we are working and have to be someplace at a certain time, is different than our weekend routine. But we wake up every single day and we do these 8 to 15 rituals in the exact same order. Like for me, I brush my teeth and then I get into the shower. I've been doing that for 30 years. In fact, they're almost like the same thing. The second I finish brushing, I drop the brush and I step into the shower. You know, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong. Everybody has their own different rituals. And so you know what time you wake up, but you don't know what time you brush your teeth. Because everyone brushes their teeth typically after one thing and before another thing. And so if we can think of our when should I meditate in the same ritualized way, not at a time of day, because that time never comes, but if we can think of it in terms of a ritual, and so the ritual that I developed is called RPM, rise, pee, meditate. And if we can truly, you know, rise, and the first thing we do is pee, then we're two-thirds of the way there. And if the next thing we do is meditate, then before we've done anything else, we've got pretty much, you know, for me it's a half hour every morning. I've got 30 minutes of stillness and silence. But someone else may say, I'm just going to do this for a minute. Great. You've got a minute of stillness and silence that's inside of you that you never would have had otherwise. And then you can just, you know, move out throughout the day, and the trajectory of your day has a little piece of stillness and silence in it, so that every conversation you have, every thought that you have, every action that you take now has just a little bit more of stillness and silence. So it'll be, you'll make a better choice. You'll have a more creative response. You may be a little more patient. You may be a little more compassionate. These are all good things. We're better when we do this. And if we say, oh, I'll do it at 10 o'clock, realistically, 10 o'clock never comes. The emails pour in, you know, something else happens. We get called away and suddenly it's 2 o'clock and then we say, I'll meditate at 3 and then, you know, we get called into another meeting or we have a project that we need to work on or more emails come in or texts or phone calls and then suddenly it's 6 o'clock and you go, well, I'll meditate, but first we're going to go out to dinner and then we'll have a couple of drinks and then suddenly it's 8 o'clock and now you're dancing and suddenly, you know, you're shaking it up on the dance floor and it's 11 o'clock and then someone says, come on, let's do a nightcap and you get home at 1 in the morning. And you had all those opportunities to meditate, but you never did because then they got pushed. So if we can RPM, rise, pee, meditate, that's when we want to meditate, when there's still a little sleep in our eyes.
How long do you have to meditate in the morning? How long do you meditate? And is there a recommended amount of time for people to meditate in the morning?
I don't want to say there's a recommended time because some people will say, like, forget it. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've often said, you know, I recommend 30 minutes, and if you don't have 30 minutes to spend on yourself, you should probably sit for an hour. But, you know, I've been doing that probably for about 12 years now, for 30 minutes every morning, and it's the same thing as brushing my teeth. I don't debate, should I or shouldn't I? Just like we wake up, we don't go, should I brush my teeth today? Forget it. Let them deal with it. You know, do we say, oh, you know what, should I or shouldn't I shower today? We do it because we've ritualized it. You know, when we were like 8 years old and we were told to go brush our teeth, we would like sneak into the bathroom, wet the brush, and then say, look, I brushed. you know.
Right.
But then after time, we suddenly realized, oh, this helps me keep my teeth and I don't get cavities and my breath is fresher. So I guess I'll keep doing it. And so that's the key. If we can find a way to ritualize it, whether that's 5 minutes, and that's why I've created all these guided meditations. You know, if someone has, you know, if you have 15 minutes to just sit down and play one of my guided meditations, they're all free and there are hundreds of them. And you can just like sit down, it'll slowly relax you. Then I'll, you know, introduce some kind of tool or technique to meditate. And sometimes we use a mantra, sometimes we follow our breath, sometimes we just use an affirmation for the day. And then we stop and then we launch into our day. And, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of people around the world who are every single day, they go to my website, davidg.com, and they just, you know, use one of the meditations that's there. And if you join my Sweet Spot community, which is also free, and all it only requires you giving your email address, then every Friday I send a guided meditation, a weekend meditation. And so that's allowing people to sort of like check it out and experience what it's like to meditate. And it's a little easier sometimes when you have a guide, just like it's like it's sort of like having a personal trainer for meditation, you know, comes over to your house, you know, to crack
it dawn,
meditates with you for like 15 minutes, and then you start your day.
When you meditate in the morning, do you completely empty your brain, or are you focusing on things? I know I'm getting personal here, but I'm just curious.
No, that's okay. You know, no. Listen, we all have thoughts. So my meditation may start off, you know, very, very turbulent because I've got a lot of stuff on my mind that I need to accomplish for the day. Or it could start off very, very calmly. And then, you know, slowly my thoughts settle. Then, you know, suddenly I'll start to make lists and then I'll settle back down. And then I'll start thinking about, you know, some TV show that I watched the other night, and then I'll settle back down, and then I'll try to think, oh, what time is my flight to 2 days from now? And then I'll settle back down. But as you just get more and more comfortable with that practice, suddenly you realize, oh, the time is up. So it's time to do whatever. So, you know, I often tease people that, you know, I say, you know, when I sign off, I say, I'll see you in the gap, which is that space that you get to when you meditate. And sometimes the gap lasts for a billionth of a second, and sometimes that gap can last for 10 minutes. We never know because it's a place of such total deep relaxation. And so a lot of people say to me, but I fall asleep every time I meditate. I'd be like, isn't that brilliant? Isn't that so great that you fall asleep every time you meditate? That means you've actually gotten to relax your mind enough so that it surrendered to that stillness and silence. So I think that's a sign of a verified meditation. Now, if you fall asleep every time you meditate, it probably means you're on Facebook at 2 a.m, you know, so that's not great. But, you know, they've now scientifically proven that 15 minutes of meditation is more restorative than 15 minutes of sleep. So the next time you're just about to hit the snooze, instead, sit up in your bed, put your back against the headboard, and do that 16-second routine. Do it, you know, do it 20 times. That's 5 minutes. You will be amazed what unfolds throughout the rest of your day.
Now, another David G. term I think of and I think it is one of your meditation mantras, is "Hum Brahmasmi, baby." Did I say it right?
Yes. Yes, that's it. That's it. Thank you for paying such close attention, Lisa. I really appreciate that.
What does that mean?
There are these ancient sayings that were written down like 6,000 years ago in India. They're called the Mahavakyas. Maha means master, and Vakya means saying. So they're just like the master sayings, the great sayings. And one of them is "Aham Brahmasmi," and "Aham" means I am, and Brahmasmi means the universe. So it's sort of like it's a great affirmation. If you're feeling less than, or if you're feeling, oh, I always make a mistake, or I'm so stupid, or I didn't get that job, or I can't believe this, or I got stuck in traffic. Anytime you're thinking less than in any way, I like to say like, "Aham Brahmasmi, baby, I am the universe." And so yes, that's a term that I've been using now for about 10 years. But for me, it's always it's like you know, it's like when the human torch goes flame on. You know, it's like when any of our superheroes, you know, suddenly like reaches in for that one extra little piece of like surging them forward. For me, that's always the aham brahmasmi moment.
Okay, so I talk on the show a lot about how I'm just a regular person and, you know, I have my challenges and my ups and my downs, but I try to live my life back from the end forward and knowing that we're all going to have the same end. And I don't say that being a Debbie Downer. I just say it that I want to make the most of every moment. I want to be happy. I want to be transcendent. I don't want to live on ground level. I want to be up and I not looking down on people, but just in taking the most out of life that I can get. So, but I don't feel like I do that every single moment. I have siblings and, you know, as you said, you get in a car and you drive. Are you always this empowered, David G? Are you always this excellent and getting it right?
You know, I just want to be a little better than I was 10 minutes ago. That's sort of like my internal mantra. I still, you know, I struggle with the same exact challenges as everyone else. And when, you know, about 3 years ago when I left the Chopra Center, I was like, gee, I'm going to launch out on my own and become this, you know, this person who travels the world to share meditation. Well, will I be able to even pay my credit card bills? And, you know, so I have the same fears and challenges and concerns as everyone else. You know, I mean, I think there are like these universal things that we're all trying to do. You know, we all want to make enough money to not have to worry about money, whatever that is to you. It's different for every single person on the planet. And I know multimillionaires who still worry about money, so they have to keep making more. We all want to have someone care for us or love us just a little bit more than we were. We're all looking for attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance. We're all looking for deeper levels of fulfillment. We all want to, when we put our head on the pillow at night, you know, have that easy feeling that like, ah, you know what? There's nothing going on that's driving me crazy. We all want to be in, you know, the highest state of health that we can be in. So, you know, I have the exact same concerns and needs are universal, and they're in me and they're in you and they're in everybody listening, and they're in, you know, everyone from, you know, the most famous, you know, Jennifer Lawrence has it and Barack Obama has it, you know, everybody has it, and the Dalai Lama has it. Everybody's got these same needs. But what I find is that the more I meditate and the greater it gives me clarity on a daily basis, that it really allows me to put things in perspective. And so when I find myself in the middle of getting really frustrated or irritated with someone, I'll say to myself, you know what? I'm going to die and this person's going to die. I don't know when. None of us know when. It could be 30 years from now. It could be in 3 days. It could be 30 minutes from now. And so what do I want? What do I want? You know, do I want to celebrate this moment that I'm with them and stop trying to be right? I'll ask myself, do I want peace or do I want to be right? Do I want to send the message of sweet vital nectar, or do I want to, you know, send out toxicity? And so, yeah, I get, you know, suddenly I'm trying to do something and I stub my toe, you know, figuratively or literally, whatever. And suddenly I'm like, ow. Or I'll, you know, I remember wherever I'm speaking, wherever I'm teaching, part of that understanding is that, you know, we're going to do some important work either at a hospital or at a school, or we're going to give some money to a charity or to a cause. You know, I'm really big on charities and causes. All proceeds from Secrets of Meditation go to charity. And so that's something that has really allowed me to just, you know, flow money to areas that I otherwise wouldn't, you know, have the funds to even support or pay out. And that's been, you know, it's a great feeling to me. But we're all going to suddenly go, oh, that's not what I expected would happen. Oh, I can't believe he said that. Oh, I can't believe this is going on. You know, we all do that. But when our heart is filled with love, like really, really, really filled up, we've all been there at some point. you know, whether you don't have to win the Super Bowl to have your heart just exploding, you know, with joy. But, you know, whenever you're like really filled with joy, you're never feeling less than. You know, you're feeling so great, and you don't point or blame or judge anything when you're in that mode. So we know that we can be in that state. So really when I find myself regretting or grieving, I just remind myself to have a little gratitude. And I can shift from grief to gratitude and suddenly realize, oh, you know what? Here I was complaining about this thing, and now I realize I have like one of the greatest gifts in the world. So whenever you find yourself, whenever I find myself feeling less than, I suddenly will put some attention on all the amazing gifts that I have received, you know, that my dad, my mom died when I was pretty young, but my dad's, you know, 88 and he's still alive and he's, you know, he's shooting his age in golf. And I live 8 minutes from the beach, and so I can go to the beach every single day. Right now I'm breathing a big gust of ocean air. I have people in my life that I really, really care for. There are things that make me so joyous and happy. That's really where I should be putting my attention instead of pointing a finger and going, oh, look at you. I can't believe you said that, or blah, blah, blah. So yeah, you know, I think being human is just a fascinating journey for all of us. And sometimes it takes us down, and sometimes we can fly and we can elevate and we can feel really great about it. But when I find myself getting constricted, I'll do that 16-second technique, and I'll just take a long, slow, deep breath in. I'll do that 16 seconds, really get really clear, and come back out and realize, gee, I have so much to be grateful for. That's really where I want my attention to be in that moment.
Well, we just came up with the name of your next book, and if you don't use it, I will. From Grief to Gratitude.
I love
great.
It.
That is great. And we'll be seeing you soon. I'm putting this out in the universe right now in Ann Arbor, Michigan, because this radio network, Body, Mind, Spirit, also has a magazine. And I put it out probably a year and a half ago. Hey, if David G. came to town, would you like to come? And heard from lots of people. So we need you here.
Oh, nice.
Ann Arbor, Michigan, and hopefully someday we can make that happen sooner versus later, because it's a great community, and we would love to have you here. And I'm bursting with gratitude right now for you taking the time to share yourself with us. Now, your book is Secrets of Meditation. Tell us where we can get the book or how we can support you, your website. What can we do for you?
Well, you can support me by visiting davidg.com. That's D-A-V-I-D-J-I. A lot of people go, what is that? What's that kooky one-word thing? And after I've been working at the Chopra Center for a little bit, Deepak Chopra and David Simon came up to me and they said, you can't be David anymore. We can't call you David. We're going to call you David G. It's too confusing because there can only be one David here and it's David Simon. So I said, well, what does David G mean? I said, you mean like 12-step David G? And they said, no, J-I. It's a term of reverence in Hindi. It means beloved. And I said, oh, well, that's perfect because my mother named me David because in the Bible that means beloved. So I'll be beloved, beloved. So that's the story behind David G. But people can go to David G, davidji.com, and just sign up to be a member of the Sweet Spot Meditation Community. And you get all these free gifts and videos and meditations and articles. And if you, you know, care to join me at one of the places that I'm traveling to, you're the first to find out where I am going. And that's pretty much how people can support me. But I do have a gift for all of your listeners. If you go to davidg.com, and if you want to receive one of, you know, a free guided meditation right now, then the easiest place for you to do that, you can actually you can buy it, and at the checkout you'll have a special code, and the code is Cosmic Energy. So if you just type in Cosmic Energy, you'll save on that Cosmic Energy meditation. So that's something that everyone can listen to. But there's tons of free meditations that you can stream. And I don't know, maybe there's 250 or 300 of them right on davidg.com. So that's what I would encourage people to do. Try this thing, see how you like it, and who knows, maybe you have fun in the process.
Thank you for being a walking, breathing human inspiration, and thank you so much for taking the time to be on today's Inspiration with me today.
Thank you, Lisa. It's such a joy to be here. You're doing great work. You're keeping it real in Ann Arbor, and it's my pleasure to join you on that mission. So thank you to everyone who's taking the time to listen to this. And
yeah, absolutely. Grateful for you listening, and I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Great.
All right. I